Hey guys, if you want updates on our latest episodes, then be sure to subscribe to the Film Colossus podcast on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen. Also, if you'd like to support the show and hear episodes ad-free, then subscribe to our Patreon page at patreon.com/filmcolossus.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Doctora Ramos, a la sala de espera.
Hay un problema que afecta a muchos niños que no puedo resolver sola. Se llama estrés tóxico y esto aumenta el riesgo de problemas de salud. Pero hay pasos que los padres pueden tomar para superar el estrés tóxico. Aprende cómo en first5california.com.
My name's Chris Lambert.
And my name's Travis Bain.
This is Film Colossus.
It's welcome to Film Colossus.
Welcome to Film Colossus.
Your guide to movies.
We have another one here today. I think this is the... I'm so excited to talk about this one.
Oh my gosh. This is one of the best, Chris.
It really kind of truly is.
Like, we've talked about movies in the show that I really, really, really like. Like, I love Knock at the Cabin. But this is the first for me that it's like... It's on a different level. Like, I feel like it's when we talked about Prisoners with you. Like, for me, this is the kind of movie that... This is the reason I watch movies. Like, this is exactly what I'm looking for.
It's so... I mean, okay, so we're talking about Chungking Express.
Mm-hmm.
Wong Kar-wai's breakout film, right?
I would think... I mean, a lot of his early work is revered, and I'm sure plenty of people knew about Ashes of Time and... did Ashes of Time come out before this? I think it did, yeah. Or they came out the same year. I think it came out
same year. Yeah, yeah, it said he was working on this while filming, or like in a downtime. While filming Ashes of Time.
Yeah, that's an important part actually to talk about with this movie. But yeah, that was the case. But it, you know, as tears go by, he did have movies that were that had, I'm sure, an audience. But Chungking Express was the one that blew him up.
I mean, this is one. I mean, let's start with you and your relationship with this one, because this is one that you made me watch.
Is that true? Oh, goodness. I don't remember that.
I feel like this is one of those ones back in the day that you were like, you should watch Chungking Express.
Wow.
I don't think I watched this on my own. I think I was prodded in some capacity by you.
I'm sure. Any chance I get to make someone watch this movie, I'll do it. I'm looking at my ratings. As like I can trace back to when I rated a movie. I got this in March 2012. So I started really getting into movies in 2006, my freshman year of college. And back then it was mostly watching like all the stuff you're supposed to watch, you know? Like, I watched The Godfather. Like, I hadn't even seen stuff like Shawshank Redemption, you know? I really had no exposure to, like, adult movies, I guess. And if I ventured outside of, like, those kinds of classics, the only thing I would watch in terms of, like, foreign movies would be, like, French New Wave or Italian neorealism. Basically, like, all these things Criterion told me to watch. So, like, that was my exposure. And I consumed a lot of movies in those earlier. So it does kind of surprise me, I'm looking at this, that I didn't watch this movie until March 2012. But I guess I didn't really get into Japanese or Chinese movies or Korean movies all that much outside of, like, you know, Ozu, like Tokyo Story. So this was probably right when I was starting to get into those kinds of movies. And I think... So I remember specifically, actually, Chungking Express was probably the first one I watched of all of Wong Kar-wai's movies. But I remember specifically that at my wife's, or she was then my girlfriend, now she's my ex-girlfriend, but my then girlfriend's sister's wedding, because my wife was a bridesmaid, she was gone all day and I had the whole day to myself. And this sounds really sad and actually makes it sound like I should be a character in Chungking Express. But I spent the whole day sitting in a hotel room watching Wong Kar-wai movies. Like the night before and the next day leading up. Like that's all I did. Which, for the record, it is a complete disservice of these movies to watch them on a laptop. But that's what I did. I've rewatched them all since, so don't worry. But this movie was like in that period. And like I was really just falling in love with Wong Kar-wai. Like his movies really spoke to me and their energy and what they were doing. And I think even for a while, Fallen Angels was my favorite, but Chungking Express is the only one since then that I've like repeatedly watched over and over. I don't know how many times I've seen it, probably like 10 times or something. And it's just this kind of movie. I don't know when it happened. I guess it was like the second or third time I watched it. It has a certain rhythm, a certain ebb and flow that I find intoxicating, that I just really melt into, and it washes over me, and I love the feeling of it. I don't get bored by a single second of it, even when nothing's happening. I'm just so invested in these people and like their stories. I never get sick of it. I don't know. It's just a movie I've continually revisited over and over.
Makes sense to me. When I was watching this, I was just like, this is right up Travis's alley.
Yeah.
It's whimsical. It's insightful. It balances emotions. It has the grayness of a rain cloud, but it's not storming.
Mm-hmm.
There's something kind of just dynamic to how it balances everything and how it saturates with emotion and allows you to kind of drift with it.
Mm. Right.
Yeah. So I must have watched this for the first time then not too long after you, like 2012, 2013.
Yeah. Because we first like met each other in 2013, right?
2011, Travis.
Well, I mean, I meant like when you moved to Iowa.
Yeah. That was 2013. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think we had both watched it. Like, I think I had watched it by the time I was in Iowa.
I would think so.
Yeah. So this had to have been in that 2012. We're kind of like prompting each other to watch things. You would just watch this. And I'd been getting into Criterion at that time as well. But I don't think. Was this one of the ones that had just like left Criterion at the time? So it was considered like a rare Blu-ray to get?
Yeah. For a while, a lot of the movies weren't even on Blu-ray. So this might have been one of the ones they added later. Let's see. Here we go. Wikipedia to the rescue. Released on DVD and Blu-ray in 2008. Although both versions are now out of print.
Yeah.
Criterion has since reclaimed the rights and is currently available. Okay, so yeah, I guess you're right. It's not available. Do I have it? Do I own it? I'm going to look to see if I own this.
We actually sent Travis into investigative mode.
Maybe I don't own it because. Can you hear me?
Barely.
This is okay. This is part of podcasting.
This is peak podcast. This is what you do when you've made hundreds of podcasts.
Okay, so I don't own Chungking Express. It's always on Criterion, so that must be how I watched it, or I've, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
it's available on something.
Yeah, I mean, right now it's on HBO Max. I refuse to call it Max.
I don't know why I had to go look to see if I had it, because like I didn't watch it. That was so stupid. I do own In the Mood for Love. And I actually, if this movie ever comes out in 4K, I'm just desperate to buy it. But the only reason I haven't sought it out, tried to buy it, is I'm just praying that someday it'll come out on 4K through somebody. I hope Criterion.
Yeah, I mean, it was one of those things, because I remember after I watched it, I immediately was like, I need to own this movie. Like, I need a copy of this movie. And when I looked it up, because I just bought a number of Criterion movies, it was like, this is out of print, and to get it on eBay is like $150, $200. Like, it was, it and Playtime were up there as these out of print gems that people really wanted. And there was a moment like 6 years ago or something, 4 years ago, where it was available on Amazon. It just came up on Amazon. Like, buy the Blu-ray of Chungking Express from Criterion, and a bunch of people ordered it. It was a post on Reddit. Like, hey, you can buy Chungking Express, and all these people were just like, oh my god, oh my god, oh my god. And I placed my order, and after like 3 months, they're like, hey, here's your money back.
Wow. Well, they did actually re-release it in that box set for Wong Kar-wai, which, again, I've never bought because I'm hoping they release 4K UHD someday. These are actually 4K restorations, but it's not UHD. It's not like, I need the real deal stuff.
Yeah, you have that addiction to the UHD.
And the other thing to note about that Wong Kar-wai collection they released is that there are different cuts of a bunch of the movies, including Chungking Express.
I did not know that. That's cool.
And it's mostly because it was the only way Wong Kar-wai would agree to do the box set and like give his director's approval, which Criterion always loves to throw out there and let everyone know, like, David Lynch approved. And he was really, that's one thing I absolutely love about him, is that he loves to experiment. And he was really interested in re-releasing this movie in a new way. It's like a remix of a song or something. Like, he wanted to show like some other, because back then when they were putting together this movie, like you said, they were just shooting scenes when they could and like throwing them together. And it was just like this amalgamation of randomness that they were like trying to make into a movie. And at the time they were just doing what they could. They were doing whatever their budget allowed and what they technically knew how to do. These days they know how to do a lot more, and they wanted to recut it, which I think is awesome. I would love to experience this movie in a new way.
Yeah, that makes me curious, that's only in the Criterion box set that's available?
I believe so.
Interesting.
It could be available somewhere else, I guess. Maybe the 4K restorations were part of those recuts, but I think that was the case.
It made me curious because at the end credits of the one that's on HBO Max, it mentioned something about 2019 or something. And it made me wonder if the one on HBO Max might have some of the, if it's the original or if it's maybe some of the updated.
Interesting. The one I saw on Criterion was just like the one I've always seen.
Yeah, I'll check that out. Okay.
I'm pretty sure Chungking Express is one of them. I know for sure Fallen Angels has some like extremely different things going on.
That's awesome. I need to go on a whole like Wong Kar-wai. This is still the only Wong Kar-wai movie I've ever seen. Ooh. I need to go on like a whole like dub K dub bender and just like really dive into the filmography.
I feel like you would really like Ashes of Time. Aren't you into martial arts?
Yeah. 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 I enjoy those things.
Like, the guy in the cover looks like Raiden.
I like that, too. Raiden was played by Christopher Lambert. Lambert.
Your doppelganger.
Yeah.
Your name, doppelganger.
Yeah. Namesake. Also, this was my second time watching Chungking. I remember the first time finding it so, like, whimsical and charming and dynamic and fascinating. And it's always stayed at that high level in my brain. But I also didn't remember a lot of it. It's been a decade now.
Yeah.
So this is my first time watching it in a decade, and even better than I remember. Just so fascinating and dynamic. And I gotta say, I have in the last week watched Hypnotic by Robert Rodriguez, which is the worst performing movie of Robert Rodriguez and Ben Affleck's career.
I'm sure of it.
So that, Blackberry, which was okay, but not like fantastic. Mm. And then Fast and Furious 1-8.
Yeah.
Just in the last like 10 days. So to watch Chungking Express was
like relief.
Yeah, it was such a different experience. And, you know, I've enjoyed my fast run.
Mm-hmm. Until you got to 8.
Until I got to 8, which infuriated me. And there's a point in this conversation that might relate to Fast and Furious 8 in our discussion.
Fate of the Furious.
Fate of the Furious, yeah. Our text message discussion earlier. But, yeah, Chungking Express was just so refreshing, just in the context of everything being so bombastic and so big and so blockbustery. Even for as small as BlackBerry is, it has kind of more of that energy of something larger. And to just have kind of the calmness and spirit of Chungking was very, very refreshing.
Yeah. It's, I think it's a key to the movie. The kind of low-key, humble, like, everyday kind of feel of it. Yeah. Because the movie's all about these people who live in a city, and I love the use of the city in general. How he says, like, you know, people are 0.1 centimeters away from each other. Like, it creates this idea that, like, there's a hustle and bustle, and that's part of the cinematography, too. Like, the flashes and swashes of people. Things are moving at a rapid pace. You're constantly passing people, yet you feel alone. You feel lost. You feel missing. You feel like your identity can't possibly stand out in this mess. And to me, that just kind of captures a general feeling that I think everybody in the world goes through, unless you're just like super rich and awesome and everyone loves you your entire life and nothing's ever a problem, I guess. Like, but 99% of people, like, I think can relate to that feeling. And it's just a testament, I think, to the movie that it can. It's one thing to, like, have that be an inherent part of the movie just through, like, the script and, like, the way your characters are, but the feeling the movie creates, like, the constant sense of isolation and inui, and is it inui? Inui? How you say that?
Ennui.
Ennui. Wasn't even close. I know I always read it and, like, love, like, what it means, and one day dreamed of using the word but never thought about how to pronounce it.
Ennui.
Yeah, ennui. I just love this movie. Like, it's a thing that you almost can't even put into words, that a movie's able to capture that so perfectly, and that feeling. Like, how does a movie visualize something like that? Yet, you know, when you watch it, like, you feel it and you sense it, and you're like, I've been through that before. Like, fuck, like, I want these people to find love, please.
Rooting for them so heavily.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Looking for a new high-end mascara without breaking the bank? The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara gives you a high-end lash look in a premium gold luxe packaging. It's all about panoramic volume and fully fanned out lashes. With its tapered brush, the new Panorama Mascara catches every single lash, giving you the false lash look without any of the hassle. Say goodbye to clumps and flakes, because this mascara is specially formulated to resist them all day with up to 24-hour wear. And the best part? It performs better than luxe mascaras at only a fraction of the cost. You can buy Panorama Mascara on Amazon today.
This episode is brought to you by Philo. Do you love TV? Do you love saving money? Then Philo is your solution. Philo has shows, movies, and live TV for just $25 a month. You can even try it for free with their 7-day free trial. No contracts, no commitments, no hassles. Just a better way to watch TV. Never miss a minute of shows like the hit docuseries Where is Wendy Williams? Or classics such as Friends. If you can't get enough TV, then there's no better way to watch. Philo has more than 70 channels like BET, MTV, and AMC. And the best part? You can try it yourself with their 7-day free trial. Sign up today at philo.tv/poppods. That's philo.tv/poppods to get 50% off your first month.
What you're saying about like the location of Hong Kong in this, and specifically the Chungking mansion kind of market area, is so fascinating, because so much of this film is exploring that dynamic, not just between individuals, but also with the externality of somebody and the internality, to where it's using these public spaces as very much like the external longing and sense of connection, and juxtaposing it with the internal feelings that everybody has in this internal kind of place that is the apartments, and the apartment kind of representing this internality, this externalization of the internal. So it's like you have the markets in the outer world as representing the outer world and how this person relates to it, but then the apartment being this more private place within that is such a cool dynamic. And we get a little bit of that in the first story with 223, as we see him kind of going between, really when he's out and about trying to connect over and over again, and then seeing how bored he is when he's in his apartment. Yeah. And you really get that sense of him being uncomfortable with himself and needing somebody he can kind of connect to. And then you get something similar with 663, where we see how cool, calm, and collected he is when he's out and about in the world. And then he goes back to his apartment and is just like in his underwear, talking to his stuffed animals, like anthropomorphizing everything, but everything that he's anthropomorphizing isn't him kind of talking to himself through his grief at the end of his relationship. It's just so layered and well done and dynamic and fascinating. And that use of location and place to capture the external internal dynamics. Perfect. Perfect, perfect, perfect.
We'd all love to hit skip on our problems now and again, but using weed to deal with stress as a teen won't make your issues go away. That's because THC messes with parts of the brain responsible for fear and anxiety, making it even harder to manage them on your own. So even the smaller things can start to feel difficult to handle. Learn better ways to deal with stress at mindovermarijuana.com. That's mindovermarijuana.com.
Sponsored by the California Department of Public Health.
It's incredible because, like, it's, again, one thing, everything you're saying is, like, technically amazing. Like, on paper, you could see what this movie's doing and the dynamics it's setting up, and you're like, that's brilliant. Like, who is this guy? He should direct a movie. Oh, he did. He directed this movie. And when he directed it, he added, like, there's that extra layer, I guess is what I'm getting at. Like, the way he visualizes that, the way he creates a world that you're watching kind of interact and intertwine between itself. Like, it's one thing that Cop 663 is talking to all of the things in his apartment, but there's something extra added to that when Faye breaks into his apartment and is also interacting with all these things.
Yes.
And becomes just like an inherent part of his apartment in a way he doesn't know. It creates this ethereal connection between them that she knows about, but he doesn't, yet he's like, in the magic of this movie, he's kind of building a relationship with her in that way, in a way he doesn't know.
Yes.
Like, it's kind of like, what is that? Like, that's just such a fascinating and phenomenal thing for a movie to pull off. And this is just like a simple independent movie. That's more magical and wonderful than movies with millions of dollars in budget can do. It's just, it's an incredible directorial feat.
I mean, that's just great literary writing. And that's the thing when we were arguing earlier about showing. So Travis and I were in a discussion about Fate of the Furious, the mm-hmm. 8th installment in the Fast and Furious
franchise. I imagine we'll be talking about this movie in a future episode, but go on.
Yeah, and it's one that Travis loves. It's number 3 in your rankings of the Fast franchise.
Three or four.
So it's meaningful for you, and it was my first time watching it, and I think it's at the bottom for me, and we're discussing some of our back and forth on it, and mine was related to how it brings in Jason Statham to the team, because he was just a villain in the previous film, and then he ends this movie as part of the family, and I think there was such a huge hurdle in doing that, and that it wasn't really explored well. And Travis, you were arguing that it's shown to us, and I was saying I don't think what it's doing is necessarily showing. To me, what Chung King does here is showing the way in which it has Faye in the apartment after making that connection between 663 and his apartment, with it representing kind of his psyche, his grief.
Yeah.
And she's coming in and then cleaning up the apartments is essentially her helping him get over the grief of his relationship. And we see that dovetail with him feeling better about everything as the time goes on, and eventually he's ready to date other people, and you get this relationship that's developed between them in this very different kind of style and way. And I think that's handled through showing Faye in the apartment, cleaning up the apartment. Everything this movie does with showing is what I'm looking for showing. And then when I see what Fast 8 is doing, it's like in the vein of it, but it feels not as like well done to me as this.
I understand that. I mean, again... We'll be talking about Fate of the Furious, I'm sure, very soon. But I feel like largely what you're more speaking to is just the way we watch movies.
Mm-hmm.
And how, you know, there's... And now I'm talking about Fate of the Furious. Here we go. Like, there's a scene where Jason Statham and The Rock are having a conversation, and The Rock comes up to him and says, like, hey, I found out this thing about you that kind of explains the way you were. And... And that can be a simple way of telling, right? Like, this tells us something about Jason Statham. But what expands it beyond just telling and makes it more of a showing instance is that Statham responds like, yeah, I researched you too. And I found this thing about you. And I found out we're pretty alike. And I respect you. And they have this deeper moment where they actually genuinely connect. And then The Rock helps him put together the car a little bit. And like this, even it gives physicality to their connection. And then they cap off their conversation with more banter and jokes about each other, kind of bringing it back full circle. Like, hey, we can still joke around with each other. Like, this is our inherent dynamic. Yet there is this added layer beneath us now. Like, that alone to me is a moment of telling or of showing. Like, it expands beyond like a simple line of dialogue and shows how their relationship has been deepened and how he is becoming part of this group. That is one way of doing it. but I think that Chungking and Express opts for something very different, where people in this movie are constantly disconnected. They aren't meeting at the same moment in time. They aren't providing what the other person's needs in the moment they need it. You know, Faye wants Cop 663 the entire movie, and it isn't until he's ready to reciprocate and she decides that she needs to escape, that she needs a moment, that she needs to give it a year to, like, see if he still actually wants her in a year. Like, that is constantly happening throughout the movie in a way that, yes, like, that shows something. It brings in an inherent dynamic to the movie that these people are desperate to find love, which creates irony because, like, love's right in front of them the whole time. They can have it right there if you just, like, grab this person and, like, take the love they're giving you. But it's not that easy. We all know it's not that easy. And that real love takes time, and it's random, and it shows up when you least expect it. It's just an incredible thing that the movie is able to show.
Yeah. And I mean, that exploration through the multiple stories, it's funny because the second story feels, by the time you get to the end of it, I feel like it's easy to kind of forget about the first story.
Yeah, I agree. And it's 40 minutes long. It's like, it's a lot of the movie.
Yeah, it's a good chunk. It's just, you get such different character journeys. It's like the time spent with Faye and the emphasis put on Faye versus the woman in the wig. what do we even call her? Wig woman?
Woman sunglasses? In the blonde wig. That's her character name.
Yeah. But there is something fascinating to it as well, because there's part of me that started to wonder, especially at the end when Faye has on the sunglasses and her hair is growing a little longer, if you couldn't see the woman in the blonde wig as like a future version of Faye.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't think that's what it's implying. Like, I wouldn't make that as like a primary reading or anything. Mm-hmm. But there's just resonances between how the characters kind of behave, look, the innocence of Faye kind of near the beginning, and some of the experienced hard edgedness of the woman in the wig at the end, and just how they're relating to Rain, how they're using their sunglasses. I get that the connection's probably a little more just in the poetics of giving it a little bit of like full circle resonance between the characters, but it is interesting to think of. Have you heard that they're talking about doing a sequel?
I have not.
Yeah.
But welcome it.
Apparently, Wong Kar-wai has written a script where it's taking place in like 2036. And it's a spiritual sequel to Chungking Express.
Sounds like something he would do.
Yeah. And just thinking that it's like a future movie, I think, was in the back of my mind as I was like, time travel? No, but there is something fascinating about the difference in experience between the characters, where the woman in the wig is a little more hardened and a little more experienced than Faye, where Cop 663 is a little more experienced and hardened than Cop 223. So it's like you have characters that are kind of experienced and inexperienced meeting with each other and trying to find connection. And we see that the innocence of 223 gets through to the woman in the blonde wig.
Yeah.
Where the innocence of Faye also gets through to 663.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you mentioned the poetics of the movie, which is such an important, you know, vibrating part of this movie. Like these random things that happen repeatedly or like connect to things for no reason at all, like the multiple uses of California Dreamin' or Dreams, like those songs just playing over and over, or the fact that there are expiration dates in both stories, the fact that there are two stewardesses, there are two cops, there are all these like weird little connections that don't necessarily like mean anything, like in the, if you're getting specific, I guess, but they're more meaningful in this general sense that there are these natural connections, these natural everyday occurrences that bind moments and people together. And I think that's a beautiful thing. Like every time Cop 663 hears the song California Dreamin', he's going to think of Faye. Like he's still playing this song a year after Faye left. And, you know, he's back in the store where she used to work. It just means something to him different now. And like, I love that about the movie, that it's not so much worried about creating these like logical pairings between things and like making this full-fledged story that connects. Like these are just like natural things that everyone can relate to, that you assign a certain song to a certain person. And I just think that is the way these stories connect. Like you're right to point out that you have an experienced lover connecting with an inexperienced lover, like someone who's hardened connecting to someone who's a little more naive. Like there is that connection there. But more than anything, I think it's just like this general, just the atmosphere of love, I think, is what connects everything here. Like these little simple realities of life, these everyday things that happen that you associate with certain people and certain feelings. And they may not mean anything to anyone else, but they mean like the world to you. And that's all that matters.
Yeah, there's something to the, I think what you're getting at with some of the duality aspects is you could do something like that because it's thematically deep and relevant, but you could also do something like that just because it's part of the aesthetic and world building and sensibility of tone that you're trying to establish. Totally. And for some reason, it's making me think of Spirited Away. And it's like, you know, we look at Spirited Away and we talk about it as a defamiliarization of the coming of age story. And a lot of the details we see in that with the main character as she, I forget her name, but as she's going through this spirit world with all these different creatures and beings, and she's having to get a job and kind of like work to build up funds to save her family. It's such a classic kind of coming of age story put in this very weird package, but so many of the odds and ends that we see in that movie that we kind of fall in love with because they're so strange and so interesting aren't necessarily there for the theme. They're just there to support this interesting world and tone that's surrounding this character and her journey. And the more that you can take a familiar story and find ways to make the world around it feel unique and built up and powerful by making choices, like having these poetic resonances, it doesn't have to mean more than the fact that you have them.
Yes.
It can just be, but it adds something like very special to the experience that's dynamic and different from another version of this story. Like, this movie's not that different from Paris Je T'aime.
Right. But, a movie I'm sure everybody's seen.
Yeah, right. Everybody listening to this has watched Paris Je T'aime, right?
I feel like that's a movie that if you were like really into movies in the year 2007.
Yeah, and like, which is...
If you were born, you know, any time after like 95, you probably would never see this movie and never will.
Which is a shame because Paris Je T'aime's like,
I love that movie.
Yeah.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
What makes a life a good one? Is it the adventure you have? Or the friends you find along the way? Maybe it's pursuing your passion while striving to protect, defend, and save what you believe in every single day. So what makes a life a good one? In the Coast Guard, we think it's all of the above and more. But you'll have to find out for yourself. Visit GoCoastGuard.com to learn more.
But I feel like Chung King fits like with that, but you compare the way in which this explores the concepts of love versus the way that does, like very similar ideas, but the stylistic differences is what makes this stand out in a way that's some of the stories in that do, don't, it just, this feels uniquely itself because of those little, not little choices, but those choices that Wong Kar-wai made.
Yeah. I mean, you know, Paris Je T'aime, it's a bunch of short films by different directors. They are inherently bound by the stories of love. But you're right that, I mean, this is a completely different beast. It's Wong Kar-wai's controlling every element of it. But it, that doesn't necessarily mean it's easy to do. Like, just he has two love stories here that aren't necessarily alike, yet they feel of one. Which I think a big part of that has to do with, you know, the end of the first story, Cop 223, he's talking about, we're meeting him at the moment he fell in love with somebody. we see him go through all this shit, and we see this woman in her element, you know, doing her job, kind of the way she is. I feel like almost she's just introducing us to the hustle bustle life what town are they in?
It's based on the Chungking mansions in Hong Kong, but yes. It's like Simsha Su.
Okay, yeah,
Simsha Suite.
The mansions, yeah, that was mostly what I was thinking of. Just the chaos that is of that area and like what it can feel like to live in that space. But it's interesting that, like, you know, it's all this build to the moment where this guy sees this woman and decides like she's gonna be what solves his problems. And we start in the opposite end when we go to the second story, where we meet Faye the moment she falls in love with this guy. We don't know anything about her yet. Yet in that moment, she, quote, falls in love with him. Like, you feel like you do. Like, you feel like you know her completely and the way she's looking at him and eyeing him and, like, being cautious around him and just the general tenor of their conversation. And he's in a moment of a breakup. So we see him now going on that same trajectory that Cop 223 was going on. Yet we're seeing him at the very beginning of it and working through it the entire time. It creates this like beautiful flow from one story to the other that, again, like the stories are different. We're going on different paths, yet like it feels like one just kind of neatly leads into the other and creates this connection. Like this movie could end with Faye bumping shoulders with some guy accidentally, and this guy is going through the exact same thing.
Yeah.
And the whole movie kind of has that feel that these stories of love are interconnected and intertwined and just flow throughout the world. And nobody's story is too small for a movie. Like everyone, the pain, the suffering, the excitement you feel in a love story, like that's something we can all relate to. And it's enough for a story. It's just how you explore that story. And the fact that Wong Kar-wai is exploring like all these seemingly simple elements, you know, like people talking to objects or eating expired food, like all these silly things, like those things are really important to people. It's an amazing thing. That's how these stories are connected. Just how dedicated these people are to finding contentment and finding love and fixing themselves.
Slight correction. The markets are the Lan Kwai Fong markets in central Hong Kong.
Nice.
But Chungking is where Wong Kar-wai, like, yes, near where he grew up, or where he, like, not near, but where he grew up. So he's kind of combining those aspects.
I wrote about this. I should know this.
But yeah, I mean, there is something. I think that metaphor with the thing that stands out to me about this movie and what it does so well, aside from just those resonances, how it explores the theme, but I think the moment that really wins me over each time, and I'm not typically a fan of voiceover, but the voiceover is so good in this, but it's when 223 starts talking about the pineapples and he's buying like the can of pineapples and using it as this metaphor for the idea of his pain. Just, and it gets back to what I was talking about earlier with interiority and externality, or internality, externality.
Sure.
But Wong Kar-wai is able to have this character's emotional like pain symbolized by the cans of pineapple and the expiration date on the pineapple, and by tying those things together and by really like making this object representative of this emotional thing that all of us go through, it creates this very like poignant, simple metaphor that becomes incredibly powerful even while being comedic and kind of silly. It's one of those things you're like, oh, that's goofy, but then you also completely get it.
Totally.
We've all kind of been there with that idea of like having these hopes that have an expiration of maybe she'll come back, but then also having this pain that also too has an expiration. So I like that duality and the way in which he then extends that to 663 and the things in 663's apartment is just such a masterful use of symbolism in a movie that it's another like genius thing that Wong Kar-wai does in this. And I do want to say too that I like that the first story isn't as traditional of a romance as the second story.
Mm-hmm.
That it's like the woman in the wig is going through kind of a rough time. Like it seems like her life is difficult in the drug trafficking world she's in, the people she's around. She seems very guarded in a lot of ways, and then is betrayed by apparently the person that she's working for or working with. So it's like both she and 223 just are looking for somebody to be kind to them.
Right.
And the fact that they each get that it doesn't have to be this long, amazing romance that they share. Maybe it becomes that, you know, mm-hmm. I don't know. But at least she just needed a place to rest and somebody that she could feel comfortable around. And he provided that for her and took care of her, cleaned her shoes, like showed her this kindness in a time where she's very stressed. And he just wanted somebody to like recognize him and his birthday and to give him like this attention, this moment of attention. And the fact that she took the time to page him, it's such a simple thing, but just shows the ways in which we can have these positive impacts on somebody else's life just by being kind in a moment, not by dedicating your life to them, not by having this grand romantic like experience with them, but just by finding these little moments to give somebody something that they need, whether you know it's exactly what they need or not at the time, that can have a profound effect.
Yeah, it really paints love in a very complicated way. Like, it isn't just that you're falling in love with a person. Like, this person is this thing and likes this, and I like that too. It's something beyond that. Like, you fall in love with like what they bring to you in your life, the kind of person they turn you into, which everything you just described, I think, applies. You know, cop 223 says, I'm going to fall in love with the first woman that walks in here. And he does. And in a way, he's falling in love with like the idea of her and what she will bring to him. And he kind of, I mean, to me, inherently, that's beautiful. I mean, people get married without ever meeting each other and they find lifelong happiness. Like, love can manifest in so many different ways. And whatever a person is, no matter like who they are, like whatever their mannerisms are, the kind of person they are, like they can give you something, you know, if you're willing to initiate that love and spark something. So the fact that those first two find that with each other in a moment where they really needed it, like they're both kind of on the fringes in that moment. Like they're at these climactic moments in their life and like they find someone else that provides some sort of relief. That's what's awesome about the second story is that cop 663 doesn't even realize Faye could give that to him. And this moment where he's just so hurt and this woman is so willing to give him her love, he doesn't even realize it. Like, we have to watch him go through a lot to get to this point. And at the moment he is finally ready for her, she isn't ready for him. It just creates this, what I think is a very realistic and complicated look at love and how it's not something that always caters exactly to what we want and need or what we think we want and need. It's something elastic. It's something that takes time to understand and like form into what you need it to be. It's something that it takes cop 663 a long time to realize like who she is. Like, she's standing in front of him the whole time, yet it isn't until it's too late that he's like, oh, like Faye is this, like she's been here doing this, like she's a part of my life in a way I didn't even realize. It's just so cool to do that. Again, I'm just sitting here just amazed that someone can visualize these kinds of things. It's still amazing. It's just amazing that it still resonates to this day. Like, this movie doesn't feel like it's aged at all.
No, it's so relevant. And so, I mean, I guess anything pre-post cell phone, but you don't really like even think about it. With the pager, they could just be waiting for a text message, right?
Right.
There's something, too, that I really love. You were talking about, Faye, that moment where he's 663 is leaning back and drinking the coffee, and he's just kind of standing against the wall, and she has her head on her hands and is just staring at him from across the way, and it's raining. Is it raining? I don't know, but they're standing there, and it's just like this extended scene of her looking at him, and yeah, it's capturing exactly what you're saying of him being, I mean, he kind of knows they're kind of like eyeing each other, but he's kind of also not,
I think he's
like
just a flirtatious guy.
Yeah, I always think back, especially with the final line, when he's just like, wherever you want to take me. Is that when it's wherever you want to take me?
Something like that.
Wikipedia says wherever you will take me, but I feel like that wasn't what it was in the
I feel
HBO
like it's
Max.
Wherever you want to take me. Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah. It's such a smooth line, and I just think back to the shop owner being like, hey, 663 has a way with the women, doesn't he? Yeah, he's smooth. He's
That's just Tony Lund. He just like he naturally brings that charisma.
Yeah, I didn't realize he's in a lot of Wong Kar-wai's movies.
He's in a handful, yeah.
I'm looking forward to that. Yeah, he's got so much star power just watching him.
I'm interested to hear what you think of In the Mood for Love. It's the only Wong Kar-wai movie I've never quite loved as much as everyone else.
Okay. I'm excited to let you know how
I've
feel
about
it.
I've seen it 3 times now. Keep trying to make myself like it.
I think it was funny to me. The thing that was kind of most surprising is I remembered being disappointed that the two of them didn't end up together at the end. And I didn't expect when I got to the end on the second one for it to be so positive, where I was like, oh no, there is like hope for them. Like you can read this as now they're going to have the opportunity to kind of date.
I think
see where it goes. So I didn't remember that. So that was very nice and pleasing.
Yeah. That's another thing about these movies. Like, I tear up at the end of both stories, like when Cop 223 is just so happy that he got this message from this woman. He's like, I'm going to remember her forever now because of this, because like I really needed this. And for Cop 663 to be so ready to like take on a life with this woman and say like, I'll go wherever you take me, like do it, woman, like write it down. there's something that could be so cheesy in another movie. Like it's opting for sentimentality, but it just really doesn't feel like that at all. Like it feels very real and of what's happening in a way that I think can only be accomplished, you know, when you've realized your vision, when the aesthetic is like fully formed. These two movies in this movie just do such an amazing job of that.
One thing, I think it's the last thing that kind of comes to mind, but we talked about very briefly about how this was made while he was making Ashes of Time. Yeah, during a 2-month break from editing Ashes of Time, he put this together. And as you were describing a few minutes ago how it deals with love and looking at love, something that jumped out to me was just the how focused this is on moments rather than the grandiosity of finding true love forever in the sense of The Notebook or something, right? Mm-hmm. We're kind of just focused on these slices of life for the characters and not sure where it will take each of them, if it's just kind of a passing, like ships passing in the night and they give each other temporarily what they need. But there's something very nice or kind of fitting about the fact that this was a movie that was filmed in a moment in time, like a break while editing another film, and that it just kind of uses essentially that frame or that backdrop of the franticness of which it was made to kind of frame how it's exploring love and bring that same energy to looking at these moments in kind of a frantic, bit by bit way. It's like it's all it had time for, but it also captures something that so many movies never have the time to get to, which I think is also, to go back to Paris Je T'aime, something that that movie kind of does well in capturing just these little moments and different facets of love.
Yeah. You're basically describing one of the main reasons I love this movie more than like all movies is movies that are able to do something like that. Like I like a well-formed, masterful movie as much as the next guy. You know, I like Magnolia and Mulholland Drive, these like realized grand visions with like complicated stories that are, that in the end, like everything comes together. But there's a movie that's like this that really gets me jazzed as well, that I love just because of the effort being put in. Like you can really feel the effort and the care and commitment that's going into it, where, you know, Wong Kar-wai, like shit, he's got 2 months to put this movie together. Like let's throw together a bunch of like random shit we filmed and like let's make it all connect and let's find some beautiful moments that any other movie wouldn't mean anything, but in this movie they mean everything. Like this is the moment you understand a character. I love movies like that where it goes beyond like the story and the characters. Like it's the way they made it, the care and attention that was given to it becomes a part of the movie, becomes part of the aesthetic, becomes part of like the fervor and like the energy of watching it. That's just what I feel the whole time watching this movie. I think that's why I never get bored of it. I just fall into these scenes every time. I can sense that just the hard work that was put into it, like how much they cared about everything. It's so cool.
Yeah, it's awesome. Like it's an achievement. It's a unique experience. It's resonant with like something everybody can relate to, whether it's something you went through in high school or your early like early 20s, or just like with 6-6-3, the falling apart of a relationship you thought was going somewhere, or was established, and you're kind of recovering and rebuilding your life. It's a movie that feels like it transcends language and time and culture to just be like truly the human experience and the human condition.
I think that's a good way to end things.
Yeah. Where does it rank for you?
You know, I hadn't thought about this right before we started the call. I was like, oh yeah, I got to rank it. And I think on my Letterboxd, I currently have 14 movies that are rated 5 stars. Let's see. How many movies we got, Travis? Show off a little. out of 3,700 something movies, I have 14 with 5 stars. I think this is a new one. Like, this watch was one where I was like, oh yeah, like I love this movie in ways that like I don't think I can say I love any other movie. So it's got to be near the top, I think. Looking at my so I only have 8 movies right now that I've watched that I would in my all-time rankings. Sorry, God, we have to explain this every time. So we have these rankings on our site, and we call them our all-time rankings, but really they're the rankings of every movie we've watched since starting this list in 2022. And my list has like 380-ish movies on it. Like that's how many movies I've watched in the last year and a half. And 8 of the movies I've watched have been 5 stars, in quotes, even though really all time I've had 14. I'm going to add a 15th one here. So this is going to be my 15th 5-star rating. And in the top 8 that I currently have here, I think I'm going to put it at, God, I just love it to death. I'll put it at number 5.
What's above it? What's below it?
So above it is Showgirls at number 1, of course.
Of course.
Magnolia, Mulholland Drive, Magic Mike XXL, then Chungking Express. And then below that, we got Superbad, Lawrence of Arabia, Terrifier 2, in Flash Gordon.
That's such a diverse.
It's diverse is the kindest word you could use.
I think it's the most diverse, like, top 9 movies a single person could have. You're just missing something animated in there.
Well, Spirited Away would go in there.
Oh, yeah. Then
whenever I watch it, it'll be able to go in that list. That one might be, you know, 2 or 3 or something.
That's perfect. Then you have the whole range of movies covered. It's funny because hearing those movies, I know how much... I know personally how many of those are, like, in your top... Like, there's some of your top movies. And then I look at my list and my top 10. None of my top 10, I think, are in my top 10.
You gotta watch those movies more often, Chris.
I know. What am I doing to myself? What am I doing to myself? It's been such a long time since I've watched some of my favorite movies.
Got it.
So I think I would put Chungking... It's either coming in at 1 or 2.
Oh, wow.
I think I'm putting it at number 2. Behind American Psycho, above Black Swan.
Wow. So, I mean, that's a hell of a top 3 right there.
Yeah, which American Psycho, I think, still goes ahead because it's just endlessly funny to me. Which,
yeah.
But also how it explores perception and what it's saying about, like, society and political climate. It's just, it gets at my headiness a bit more. Where Chungking gets at my, like, romanticism a bit more. So I think in this case, headiness kind of wins out. But yeah, Chungking definitely goes above Black Swan.
Love it.
Prisoners.
Wow. I especially love to hear that.
That was good. And do we know what we're doing next time?
Shit. We talked about Vanilla Sky.
Yeah. Do we want to do that? Do we want to do something? Do we want to do the Fast movies?
Oh, the Fast movies. Now, is it a thing where we're just going to talk about all the Fast movies?
I mean, we could pick a specific one. We could talk all of them if you want to talk all of them.
I mean, part of me wants to go big or go home and have 10 episodes, one for each movie. If not that, I think I would just say, yeah, we could talk about it generally. It could maybe be even like a 3-part episode where we slowly work our way through them.
Yeah. All right. We'll see. We'll talk about what we'll do with it, but maybe kick it up, because we've done some esoteric ones recently.
Yeah.
Might be good to get back into blockbuster territory.
You don't have to argue with me.
All right, then.
All right. Well, until then, until the Fast and the Furious, we're going to take it slow.
Family.
Got a big question to ask. Anything? Do you want to do anything?
At Merrill West Credit Union, we're working towards a brighter financial future for both our members and our community, knowing that when you succeed, we all succeed. That starts with a solid financial foundation. As a credit union, we have no stockholders demanding profits. Our commitment is to our members. Experience the difference with our Money Market Max Bonus promotion, offering a cash incentive for letting us protect and grow your money. Merrill West Credit Union, working for you. Today, tomorrow, together. Merrill West Credit Union is insured by NCUA.